All right, hello, hello, friends, and welcome back to the Gaming Dad Fujo podcast. This is episode number 20, being recorded on April 3rd, 2024. I am Fujosevich, your host, former professional Hearthstone player, currently working as an analytical chemist in the pharmaceutical world, doing all sorts of chemistry things. This is a place where we get to talk about all the things that we used to talk about when we were streaming and uploading daily gameplay videos on YouTube. And instead of interrupting all this interesting talk with gameplay, I'll now interrupt myself with other topics. And on today's episode, we will be talking about, at the very least, Dragon's Dogma 2, online sports betting, and lots of April 1st talk, including the 20th anniversary of the greatest competitive gaming esports moment of all time, all of those topics, and so much more. Let's get started. He's got no time to play video games. He's the gaming dad, Fujo. Nailed it. All right, and as we are getting started, let's go ahead and just friendly reminder, if you're watching on the YouTube, hit the like button, leave me a comment, let me know how you're doing, let me know what you're gaming as well. We're definitely always looking for more gaming dad suggestions. We've been obviously a lot of time on the mobile device. We're still Pokemon going, slowly kind of ramping up. Monster Hunter now, kind of slowly ramping down. If I'm going to Monster Hunt, I want to, with the full capabilities of what Monster Hunter is all about. It's still a fun little game, but it is what it is. What else have we been doing lately? Oh, got back into Brawl Stars. It's a silly little mobile top-down shooter, competitive shooter game. That's always a fun one. Let me know what other good suggestions you may have out there. If you're listening in the podcast world, remember you can get us wherever you find your favorite podcasts other than iTunes, which I have the account. They actually sent me some weird reminder thing. I need to get that set up. But if you're on Spotify, give us a 5 out of 5. Rate us. Again, leave a message. Let us know how you're doing. Fantastic to have Fujo on the go. There's no editor's notes from the last episode. There were last time. There was a few things we had to address. That's all fine. And let's jump right into our first topic. It's going to be Dragon's Dogma 2. It's out and getting reviews. What happened? The first 3 hours it went live, it had a 38% positive review rating. That's very, very bad. Just so we're clear, 38% positive means the rest is all negative. So that's not good. The majority of people were citing poor performance, and we're going to talk about that in a lot of detail. And I quote, microtransaction hell. So there's a lot of features that were kind of left out, and you're encouraged to pay extra money, even though you've already bought the game, for all of these extra little conveniences and some game poor gameplay, some people will argue. But the really interesting thing has come up with the performance issues, and what's happening is there's a lot going on with the NPCs in this game. So what people have found is that it's actually the NPCs are bloating up your CPU performance. So what they're doing is they're actually just going into towns, and again, these are like these modern RPGs where you can kind of kill a lot of people, and they're just killing off the NPCs to kind of empty out the towns, and then performance returns to normal, and it's a really fantastic... I played a ton of Dragon's Dogma 2. I was very excited about this game coming out, and what people have learned is that there's a lot of NPC interaction with what's going on with each other, what's going on in the world, how, you know, your relation to your character, all this stuff. So the thing is, people have even joked that, like, you know, if you reduce all of the NPCs just down to cubes and just have cubes like moving around in this like 3D environment, it's not going to really change it's not going to cut down on your processing power, because it's the NPCs interactions underneath the hood of all the coding that's really messing with it. It's not like a texture, like graphical issue. So it's kind of interesting. It's interesting what's happening here. People have talked about, yeah, this is the old Stellaris method of performance improvement, just killing everything off. We're not going to get into this. I didn't play the game, but Baldur's Gate 3 had some similar issues, but not to this degree. Interestingly, on March 22nd, Capcom did acknowledge and apologize for the quote-unquote inconvenience the slowdowns may be causing, but they didn't actually address any potential fixes or plans for a patch or anything like that. And in their first 11 days, they've sold 2.5 million copies of the game. So it's really weird again that this incredibly, you know, this is Capcom. They have all the resources that any gaming company will have. They can still have these issues and not have foreseen these issues and tested through this. It's unfortunate. It'll get fixed. The game, it's Dragon's Dogma was super cool. Had a fantastic end game where like everyone's working on the same boss to get the dragon down. It was really, really cool. I really liked it. I hope Dragon's Dogma 2 has as long a lifetime as well, because maybe we'll jump on eventually when we have a more updated gaming situation. Speaking of sequels, Overwatch 2, they've also announced they've completely canceled all future PvE content, citing poor sales of previous content. And you know what's funny is that PvE was the whole point of how Blizzard justified Overwatch 2 coming out. Overwatch 2 replaced Overwatch 1. I bought Overwatch 1 and I don't have it anymore, which is kind of silly. They had this quote unquote upgrade and it just seems like they brought downgrades. And now there's no PvE. And now it's canceled. And it's just really, really strange thing that they would do, because it's, you know, Overwatch 2 was a glorified patch, really. It was just, you had Overwatch 1 and now you have Overwatch 2, and it was just a big download, and now it's free, quote unquote, free to play, but you have a lot less access to everything unless you're paying a lot more money. This is just, you know, this is one of those, like, you know, games as a service. We're seeing how the business model can really work and work against, you know, what's happening. I'm not good at FPS, but I really enjoyed Overwatch 1 because it had the heroes and you have these abilities and you can just jump around, and even if you're not, have to be super Counter-Strike precise with your little shots and stuff, I could still shoot rockets and have a good time. It's really, really sad to see what happened with Overwatch 2. And again, overall, people are still enjoying it. It's just because that's one of the things that was sold as such a big selling point of, oh, we're going to have this great PvE thing alongside with the PvP, which again has changed, and it's no longer six. I think it's 5v5 instead of 6v6. And there's a whole issue with how long queuing takes because you need a certain tanks and healers and all this stuff. So it's had its issues, which is really, really unfortunate in my opinion, because it really was a lot of fun when I played it. All right, let's move on to online gambling. And let me tell you, first sponsor, this segment's being brought to you by FanDuel's referral code in the comment. Look below, $75 for free. Helps you, it helps me. Gamble responsibly. Of course we're kidding. But are we looking for sponsors? You better believe we are. And let's be honest, I sounded pretty good, right? If someone was wanting to sell something, think about how amazing, how many products you would have just moved by the way I just sold that. I think that was really good. I don't want to be too humble here, but I think that was excellent. So you know what? And the sports gambling, it's becoming legalized in a lot of places across North America and Canada it is. And, you know, lots of people love gambling, lots of people. And you know who really shouldn't be linked with gambling on a lot of sports betting? Or paying off gambling debts? Professional athletes, especially related to their own sport. Which is exactly where we're going to start. There is this, we're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani getting mixed up in some gambling issues. And we know that sports betting is huge. Sports betting is absolutely huge now in North America. Every sports show, non-sports show, radio program, talk radio program is going to have sports betting commercials because it's such big business. There's ads for sports betting companies on jerseys. There's overlays on the TV, while games are going on. So let's go through the Ohtani story now. March 20th, the LA Dodgers, where Ohtani signed, were not bitter about him not coming to Toronto. That's fine. They terminated Mizuhara after Wednesday night's game, which ended a partnership between Ohtani and Mizuhara, which started in 2013. So that's more than 10 years now. I can do math. That relationship started back when Ohtani was playing on the Nippon Ham Fighters, which who doesn't love a team called the Nippon Ham Fighters, right? And so at that point, Ohtani's representatives claimed that he was a victim of massive theft. And now we get through some of these allegations at the time, right? The LA Times and ESPN connect the dots and are reporting that Mizuhara had accumulated millions of dollars in gambling debt. And it looks like Shohei wired $4.5 million to an illegal bookie. And I say illegal because sports betting is illegal in California, where they're located and where this betting was allegedly taking place. It wasn't clear what was happening, what Ohtani knew, if money was being loaned, what was happening. So that was the 20th. Now on the 21st, after they had LA played a game in Seoul, South Korea, and Shohei was basically surrounded by all of the Dodger PR reporters as reporters are trying to ask him, and he just looks at them and says goodnight through the translator, through his translators. This is a huge story because we know MLB is going to protect their biggest star. He just signed a ridiculous contract. We talked about it in detail, how it's it's backdated. So even though it's this amount of money, he's getting paid for basically the rest of his life, and his family will continue to get paid. They just spread the money out over so many years. It's really, really interesting the way that they've built that contract. We already talked about it. It's fine. March 23rd, The Athletic puts out a report that Mizuhara may have lied about his original university education to get hit, that helped him get his first translation job for the Red Sox when he was working with Okajima, which is kind of cool. And now it looks like he may have lied his way into Major League Baseball translating, which, to be honest, seems like a pretty sweet job, right? If you like sports and you like working with athletes and you are bilingual and you're a good communicator and you're able to build those relationships with these athletes, it seems pretty sweet. You get to travel around. You're not putting your body at risk. You're probably getting, if you're able to gamble $4.5 million, you probably had a pretty decent salary all that time. But it's really not a good look. If you lie your way into your career and then gamble everything away, probably plus more, not good. So what happens then? That was the 23rd with this report about the education, the lying, the career, all this stuff. On the 25th, Ohtani finally speaks to the press, had some time to get his story. He, at this point, says that Mizuhara had complete access to his finances. He did everything without Ohtani knowing. And he said, you know, he's not, you know, and that's where he said, look, I didn't know it. He did everything by himself. He had access a lot, you know, there's a lot of managers, blah, 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 with accounts like this. So look, Ohtani's not the first or the last athlete who's going to trust someone and get defrauded by them. There's two massive NBA cases with Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan, both losing millions of their NBA earnings. It actually turned out they had the same tax accountant who was stealing the millions from them. Not funny, not funny. I wasn't laughing at them. That was an awkward, socially awkward laugh. It's ironic. Is it ironic? I don't know if it's ironic. It just, you know, the same tax accountant stealing from two massive NBA stars. And they didn't know for years. This at least came out pretty soon for Ohtani. If Ohtani is actually innocent, he's been horribly betrayed by someone that he trusted. Otherwise, he kind of looks pretty naive. And it's kind of, It's a little questionable. We know how involved athletes are nowadays with their contracts. Everything to do with them is their quote-unquote brand. It's just not a good look if Ohtani had that much money stolen from him. And speaking of gambling, the Toronto Raptors. More specifically, Jonte Porter, seemingly soon to be former Toronto Raptor, I should say, Jonte Porter. He has been named as being investigated for some gambling fixing. ESPN reported that January 26th and 20th, people might have made a lot of money betting on Porter's under. So what does that mean? You can do all sorts of funny bets in the sports betting world. You can bet that, you know, Fujo's out there, you know, playing for the Toronto Raptors. And what's the over under that I scored 12 points? Obviously, every time you would bet the under, no one's even going to pass me the ball. I'm never not going to see. But so the under is the easiest stat to control, right? You're saying, will Jonte Porter score over or under? I think his was like 8 points or six or seven. He's averaging 6.5 points, I think, this season. I looked it up. So the over-under is right around his average. Because, you know, that's how the sports bets, you know, hedge their bets to not lose money and stuff like that, right? Now, it's really hard to say, hey, everyone, bet on my over tonight. I'm going to work my hardest. Because guess what? The other team's genuinely working their hardest to make sure you don't score, right? However, it's really easy to tell everyone, hey, I'm not going to score tonight. So he just gets the ball and will pass. He'll get the ball and make a hard shot and miss. And so on those 2 days, a lot of people made money betting on Porter, which normally doesn't happen because he's not some massive star. His brother is. His brother's a huge star. But he's like he's not a borderline NBA player. He's an NBA player, but he comes off the bench. He's not a starter. He's not a star, right? Apparently, Porter runs a bit of a side hustle giving investing tips. He is a bit of a crypto bro, so take that as you will. And apparently, he has a private Discord where he gives all this investing tips. And for $50 per month, you can get access to a special premium room with premium tips, where it seems like he may be letting people in on, I'm going to not do too well tonight. Now, he's also had a lot of injuries this year, for sure. He's had a lot of injuries. His brother is also in the NBA. Like I said, he has a $140 million contract. So if you really needed a little bit of money, you could probably ask your brother and be like, hey, can you just buy me a house? It's just strange that, like, so his salary is NBA minimum. He's making $415,000 a year. Again, to be a professional athlete, which seems pretty, if you're good enough to be a professional athlete in the NBA, you're an incredible athlete, right? Let's be honest. And if you enjoy that sport, you get to play a game for a living. You get to work with trainers and the best players in the world and compete. So to take the risk of making $50 per month off some people joining your Discord private room seems a little strange, but it's kind of seeming like all of these reports are that's what's happening. And it's a weird one. Why would you put that incredible career in jeopardy where, again, he's not making tons of money, like, you know, tons. $415,000 a year would be ridiculous for most people. But to have that salary and then still also say, you know what, I need to make $5,000 off of my Discord server this year as well, that just seems a little strange to me. So we'll follow along with this one. It's a local Toronto story for us here. So we'll follow up on that one to see how it goes. Okay, we are still way behind on Star Wars Bad Batch Season 3. We'll talk about episodes 4 and maybe 5 right now. Episode 4, we'll start at 4. Omega and Crosshair, they're still escaping. Their ship crashes. Super cool. Omega uses her gambling skills. Then obviously there's a standoff with the Imperials. They find out who they are. They realize, Dr. Hemlock had reported someone had escaped, blah, 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 whatever. But the really interesting thing here that's very, it's a quote unquote Star Wars cartoon, but there's so many cool, subtle things that they're doing where Crosshair's hands are shaking because of whatever torture that he was undergoing with Dr. Hemlock. And then they have this really cool escape scene where Omega's trying to reason and talk and gamble. She doesn't want to cause, you know, any more death and destruction. She doesn't want to put people's lives in jeopardy. She's trying to get them out safely, doing her gambling stuff. We talked about that. But then eventually they get cornered and she just looks, okay, Crosshair, we'll do it your way. And they have this super cool escape scene, you know, cool Star Wars shooting, running, jumping, all this stuff. They get Batcher and they escape. But during the escape scene, you see Crosshair missing shots that he just never did. You know, his hands were shaking earlier, holding his gun. He's missing shots, or, you know, Crosshair's whole thing is that he doesn't miss, right? That's his whole thing. So it's really, really interesting to have them do these small, subtle little things. It's really, really well done. And then, of course, the episode ends super, super tense, right? They meet up with Hunter and Wrecker. This incredible, incredible tension of the two groups. Well, the group now looking just at Crosshair coming off of his ship as they land in some remote area to meet up. And then episode 5 starts, and it's so cool that it's, they don't fill in the blank. It's like you get to fill in the blank. They've already, like, they're on the same ship and they're going, you fill in the blank of what that initial meeting and contact, maybe they'll have a flashback later, I don't know. But it's just so cool that they kind of do that. And then episode 5 is the episode of Sass. This is really, really interesting. Omega makes a comment to Crosshair. Well, I am older than you, little brother, because all the clones age faster, but it seems like Omega has confirmed that Omega's not aging faster, which is cool. AZ mentions to Crosshair, oh, your shooting accuracy is 53%. When they meet up with Echo, they're all, you know, Omega's super happy and gives Echo a big hug, and Crosshair just walks over, what, no hug for me? And it's just a lot of sass. It was really funny. Really funny episode. Then obviously the tension, Crosshair and Hunter. You know, of course, Wrecker's just going to go along. Hey, you're good. You know, Omega says you're good. I'm going to accept you. And then you can see this. You just see the dynamic of this tension between. You don't need to. It's so cool that they didn't have to show the actual conversation. They showed the tension, so you know what's happened between the two. And then, of course, they have to go on their adventure in season 5, and then they help each other, save each other, and they finally start having a conversation between Hunter and Crosshair. And, you know, there's probably going to be some more tension moving forward, but it's just really cool to see them starting to get along. And, well, I know I'm way behind right now. We're going to try and catch up at some point somehow, but we'll just keep going through. It's so cool to see the episodes and see all these, like, little interesting things and all these connections. I'm super excited to keep powering through this because it's just fantastic. And I wish there was going to be more. We know there's going to be the next Star Wars thing, which at this point we're just assuming will also be very, very good. But I'm gonna be sad when this one's done. Okay, we're gonna have to do some wrestling talk, right? WrestleMania this coming weekend. But the Raw on March 25th deserves a special mention. That's for sure. There were clips from basically every segment circulating online, and they were all excellent. The biggest was CM Punk coming back, of course, fantastic, incredible segment with Punk, Drew, and Seth. just on the mic, but they were all just firing off at each other. Just very, very, it seemed very raw and a lot more emotion than a lot of the WWE promos seemed very much like, okay, I'm going to monologue, then you're going to have a rebuttal and monologue. These, can I tell you, professional wrestlers are excellent at debate. Their politicians stink at debates. I'm supposed to make a comment, then there's a rebuttal, and then there's a response. And professional wrestlers are excellent at this in the past, I don't know, 5-ish, 10 years. But this promo, all these three guys, it was back from Attitude Era, from when I was a kid watching my wrestling growing up. So many great lines. Do you know what I think? Someone cut, nope. Excellent. Drew fires off for someone with straight edge. You spend a lot of time in rehab. Excellent. Punk then comments on Drew's constantly calling himself the chosen one. He says, chosen by who? Tell me, which paragon of virtue chose you? Which, that comment made Drew actually smile on live camera, and he tried to hold the microphone in front of his smile because we all knew he's referencing Vince McMahon, originally called Drew the Chosen One. And obviously, WWE is doing everything they can to distance themselves from Vince, so it was just incredible to see him crack. He realized that Punk had cornered him there, and it was, you know, they got through it and stuff. It just all seemed so much less scripted, so much more spontaneous. It seemed really, really cool. Obviously, you know, The Rock shows up wearing his incredible vest. He needs to grow the side. If he grows the sideburns for this weekend, it'll be incredible. But Rock's beating up Cody outside. It's fantastic. And to be honest, special shout out to The Rock for continuing to wear these ridiculous shirts and continue to show up and lean so hard into this, because we've been talking about this for months and months with CM Punk and then coming back and, well, AEW Punk and all that. And now Rock coming back this whole time, he's leaning into it so hard and committing to it. It's so good to see. He's come back as The Rock, not as Dwayne, which is fantastic, which is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, WrestleMania this weekend, like I already said. Cody will win. He's going to win. He's already doing the morning talk shows, the afternoon, daytime talk shows. He's going to win the title and do those talk shows again next week is my prediction. I just want it to be chaos. I want there to be run-ins and run-ins and run-ins. They kind of tease the Stone Cold thing a little bit. If Stone Cold does come out, I mean, Stone Cold came out and knocked out The Rock when Mick Foley won his first title on Monday Night Raw. And that we're not going to relitigate this, but that was the whole turning point of the WCW Monday Night Wars with Raw and stuff like that, because they spoiled that ending, but then everyone wanted to see Foley win his title, and it was incredible. Stone Cold has said that's the loudest arena he'd ever walked into when his music hit. Just absolutely fantastic. I hope it's a wild WrestleMania. I hope it's a lot of fun. I don't think we're going to have time to watch, but maybe we'll catch a replay or something like that. CM Punk also did an interview with Ariel Helwani, which went into a lot of backstage AEW drama. Great interview, great insight. But CM Punk came off looking a little strange. We're not going to review someone else's interview. It was very well done. But it was just strange, a little bit of hypocritical comments coming out. Ariel did, to his credit, he tried to call him out on it a couple times. But Punk, you know, oh, I know the line, I know when not to cross it, all that sort of thing. Ariel did kind of like point it out a little. And this is the thing. CM Punk is very good at knowing what crowd he's working. So there's also a good chance he knew what he was saying and how he was responding to these things in order to get more people talking about him. And more people talking about that interview and more people still interested in the CM Punk AEW drama, all this stuff. So it's very, very interesting. But more importantly, this is April 2nd, so this is yesterday. CM Punk put out a video backstage at a WWE event discussing a fruit basket arrangement. And he made silly jokes about how cantaloupe is no good. He's just picking the pieces that he likes. He made a joke how he's taking credit for the fruit basket being delivered, even though he admitted he wasn't the one who did it. But none of this matters in comparison to the last seconds of this video. He takes a strawberry. He mentions a few times how much he loves strawberries. He takes a strawberry out of this. It's a huge fruit basket. It's like a foot and a half in diameter. Takes a strawberry off and takes a bite from the leaf side with the leaf still on. This man is clearly all healed up from his injuries, because you must be some kind of animal to do that. I think the video might actually end. You know how you always have like the end frame? With like, I think the leaf has just disappeared into his mouth as he's biting down. It was wild. I couldn't believe that anyone could do that. It was incredible. I'll give it it was incredible. But just that, that to me might have been the moment, the wrestling moment of the week. As great as these other things were, that was just incredible. Just wild to see a grown man do that. I loved it. I loved it. Oh, I'm going to have a hard time moving on to April Fool's jokes now, but we're going to. You know, the April Fool's jokes in the gaming community, we're going to, that was the worst transition ever, and that's fine. It's a tradition in the gaming community. All these gaming companies always put out, like, WoW has done some historically fantastic ones. This year was pretty weak, but we'll get to that. Cyberpunk 2077, had a pretty good one. They wanted to embrace a classic game installation with the collector's edition of Cyberpunk 2077 being installed on 3.5-inch floppies, which only comes on 97,619 discs. Pretty good. Pal World put out a trailer for Pal World Dating Simulator. And judging by some of the comments in the fandom, I think it would do well. WoW has had some... I think WoW might have set the standard originally for April Fool's jokes. This one was just a silly patch notes. Some decent jokes, though. The one thing that did stand out for their season of discovery, they said there would be no more class changes for the next patch, as classes are perfectly balanced. Which, of course, in WoW, everyone's complaining that classes are never balanced, because their class is always the worst, because their class is always getting nerfed, and that someone else is... So that was actually a pretty funny one. I like that. Pokemon were hosting a Pokemon Sleep tournament. Shovel Knight devs were branching out to skincare. Lots of good stuff. Nintendo is branching out to bring back a Virtual Boy. And it looked like there was just a headgear to strap the Switch to your face like a VR, which the picture just made me chuckle. The picture was as funny as anything, to be honest. Other April anniversaries, 30 years ago, April 2nd, Final Fantasy VI. I know that's Final Fantasy III in North America. I have the poster from my game framed sitting right. I know I always look over when I do this. I point to stuff and it's to my right. Just you can picture where I'm sitting. Final Fantasy VI, just absolutely incredible, right? It's the enemy actually with a bad guy, Kefka, wins, right? You think you're okay, we're gonna be, we accumulate, we gather our team, we get our abilities, we get magic, we're powering up. We have to form like a small group to go into the floating continent, and then Kefka wins. And he gains, you know, Final Fantasy. The bad guy always wants to gain godlike powers, wants to destroy the world, and then he does those things. And then you realize you're at the halfway point of the game and you have to regather your group and help fix all the chaos that he caused because you failed. It's just fantastic. Final Fantasy VI, easily my favorite Final Fantasy, probably tied with, you know, the original. We've talked about the original and Randomizer and all the stuff, how much we love. And of course, Chrono Trigger. So those are definitely my top three Final Fantasies. Now, speaking of April 1st, this year is the 20th anniversary of the greatest competitive gaming moment, esports moment of all time. Street Fighter 3 tournament, April 1st, 2004. Daigo Umehara countered Ken Wong. You might not know the names, but anyone who's around the gaming community has probably seen the video. It's cited by many, like I said, the greatest esports moment of all time. Competitive fighting game moment of all time by far. So it's a 1 minute clip, and this clip has transcended beyond just gaming. The visuals of it's a Street Fighter. You can see what's happening. There's attacks. We'll talk about what happens, and then you see the announcer's call and the crowd reaction, and it is just so much energy. So what happens? Let's set the stage for this, for the uninitiated, for the I don't know who, but there might be some people who haven't seen this. Daigo is down to his last point of health. So in this Street Fighter, where you block a hit by pressing away from your opponent, you take much reduced damage. And he's facing off against Justin Wong, who has 40% health and a super. So in Street Fighter 3, there were supers. And what happens, you, like I said, you press away from your opponent and you block, but you still take a little bit of damage. So if Daigo does one of those, gonna lose. There's an alternative, and this is the first Street Fighter, I believe, that does this. You can press towards your opponent, and you have 1/6 of the timing window to parry the hit and take no damage. So when you block, it's really generous on the controller when you press block in comparison to the attack. And your character will block, but you take a little sliver. But that's all the health that Daigo had, right? So what happens is Justin Wong, at 40% health, has a super charged. Uses the super, which is 16 consecutive attacks. Daigo parries, I said 15, right? It's 15. Daigo parries the first 14 hits perfectly, jumps into the air, parries the 15th hit while in the air, then starts a combo on the way down, ending in his own super, winning the game. It is, the announcers are losing it, the crowd starts going wild, and again, like I said, the visuals of these bright, big attacks, boom, boom, booms, the huge combos, the supers, it's absolutely incredible. I was actually thinking, like, I think I need to start playing. I could play the audio probably from this. I didn't prepare it. Maybe I need to start preparing short audio clips for things like this. It's just so, so incredible. Like I said, it's transcended. It's been used beyond just the gaming world. People, just because of the energy of it all. And you can see what's happening. The blocks. And this incredible jump counter. It's fantastic. That's where we're going to end this episode. I want to say thanks everyone for stopping by. If you've made it this far, hit the like button. Oh, I forgot to mention on YouTube, hit the bell to get the notifications so you know when they go live, but that's fine. If you made it this far, you already know that, and let two of your friends know that too. If you made it this far on the podcast, on your Spotify, get that 5 out of 5 review. It actually really, really helps. Leave a comment. Like I said, let me know what gaming you're doing, especially dad gaming. We're looking probably for more mobile game options. Brawl Stars is fun for sure. New season coming out. That's cool. We already have a cool story for next episode already. An Atari, we got to get more retro gaming stories. We're going to have an Atari story for next episode for sure. And we're going to end it there, everyone. I hope you have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever and whenever you are. Stay safe out there, everyone. Be good to each other. And we will talk to you sometime very, very soon. Bye-bye.